We'll learn more about the new ARRL CEO in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this RAIN report.
I would like to see ham radio as a pathway for achievement for young people becoming adults, getting through high school, getting through college, getting into a career, the way that in many respects it happened for me.
That's the voice of Tom Gallagher, NY2RF, the new CEO of the ARRL, the National Association of Amateur Radio. After retiring from a successful career in finances, this Florida ham took the reins of the league in April 2016. He had some big shoes to fill, those of outgoing CEO Dave Sumner, K1ZZ, who decided to hang it up after 30 years. The new kid at the league plunged into piloting the organization into its second century. This week we bring you our second and final excerpt from a conversation this new ARRL CEO had with Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, the man behind the QSO Today podcast.
Well, we have at ARRL, in many respects, a corporate unique governance structure. The ARRL is a pure democracy. You elect a board, one vote, one member. The board represents all of the members by 15 divisions. So there's 15 members of the board. And it is the board's responsibility to design policy, to make policy for the league and by extension for amateur radio operators and enthusiasts, not only in the U.S., but even through its influence overseas. The board is the policymaking organization. The staff of the league serves the purposes of the board and the members. And so I'm the chief of staff. I'm the head staff person. And it's my job to help execute that policy. In a day-to-day sense, we do a number of things here. We're a publishing business. We're an information service. We're a customer service organization. We answer questions. We educate. And we do many other things every day. The trains have to run. And that's the first job. And then beyond that, it's helping to translate the board's aspirations for the future into concrete action steps that we can take at the league every day to advance that view.
What do you think are the ARRL's greatest challenges going into the second century?
We have really two challenges, I think. The first is the demographics of ham radio. Now, take a step back. When I was licensed back in the 60s, there were 250,000 hams. Today, there are, 750,000 hams. So that's a 300% increase in my lifetime. The rumors of the death of ham radio just greatly exaggerated. It's still a robust and growing field, and people who are ham should be gratified by that. But we're going through a generational transition, and a lot of our league members are my age or even older, and those league members have a different planning horizon than somebody who's 16 years old and getting their first license. The challenge we have is we have to bring those two groups together. Our experienced and seasoned members have a great deal to offer young people. They know a lot of things, a theoretical know-how, practice, interest, passion, service to the community. They have a great long history of doing that. We need to find a way to spark the imagination of those young people on the other end of the barbell, and some of them even into their 30s. I call them the millennials, and transfer the passion of our senior members to those young people in a way that doesn't impose a burden on the young folks. That is to say, the young folks have their view of the world, and I would like very much to see that shaped by the experience of history. So while we celebrate the future, we still respect the past and the traditions of service to country and community that are so much a part of this avocation.
Seems to me some of the challenges there then are that older retired hams may need a structure in order to be able to interact with youngsters, in order to be able to interest them in ham radio or to develop them beyond their first license. Is there some role maybe that the ARRL can play in that vein in order to help facilitate structures at the regional level to help put old timers together with prospective new hams?
Eric, your use of the word structure, I think, is very insightful. Yes, there should be and there can be, and it's our job to make it a reality. I view the avocation of ham radio as the first step to an adult life. And I was talking with Dave Sumner about this a couple weeks ago. When I was a ham radio operator, it was the first time in my life that an adult ever treated me like an adult. If I could do the job, if I could pass the traffic, if I were a responsible operator, if I built safe equipment, then I was just one of the other guys. It didn't matter that I was 16. That was kind of an epiphany for a 16-year-old. Hans taught me how to be an adult, and being a polite kid, I tried to return the compliment. What I would like to see ham radio do is expand beyond the role of simply creating more hams and perpetuating the interest. I would like to see ham radio as a pathway for achievement for young people becoming adults, getting through high school, getting through college, getting into a career, the way that in many respects it happened for me. So that imposes on the mentor the additional role of being a life coach. If you think about this country and how many parents labor every day just to feed, clothe, and educate their kids, they don't have a lot of time for the niceties of learning how the world works because they're pretty tired at the end of the day. But if we have hams that are successful career folks in whatever career, doesn't matter, education, government, law, science, business, whatever the path that they have taken, if they can help mentor a young person through the hobby of amateur radio, help them with their college apps, help them with internships in the summer. Maybe there'll be technical internships. Hope that would be the case, but they don't have to be. If every single ARRL member picked one young person and helped them down the path, our numbers would grow enormously. Our interests would be served well. Our avocation would be a robust and growing and vital activity. And at the end of the conga line is a bunch of young kids coming out to be self-propelled adults.
I'm sitting here thinking of the first time I walked into the Newport Amateur Radio Society in 1973. I was 16 years of age, and its president, amongst all those old-timers, was an 18-year-old. So I remember very well the role that amateur radio played in kind of making me an equal amongst men. So everything you're saying rings a chord to me. I brought up the issue of structure because even as a person who started an amateur radio organization where I live here, there are leaders and there are joiners. Probably the ratio between leaders and joiners could be 100-1, which means that joiners are willing to join if there's a structure, something that they can attach to that doesn't require them reinventing the wheel from the beginning. I'm happy to hear what you're saying because I think that that could be life-changing, not only for the ham radio operator, but I think our society needs more people that are technically trained.
We are desperately short of qualified STEM candidates. And even beyond that, because everybody who's a ham doesn't have to be a scientist or an engineer, and that's a point I really want to make, as a discipline, as a vehicle for learning physics, electromagnetics, and math, ham radio is perfect for the 8th, 9th, even 10th grader. It meshes very nicely with their in-school education. But those are life skills that are very useful even if you're not an engineer. Maybe you go on to become a banker or a lawyer. An understanding of those basic principles, very, very helpful. You can also be the hero in your neighborhood, as some of us were in Sandy when the next-door neighbor's generator wouldn't start. That's a great skill to have too. And I don't think hams do enough of that, frankly. I don't think that they offer their services outside as often as they could, and I'd like to see that happen more.
Well, you gave a great example at the very beginning of this conversation when I asked you about your children, your reply with your son, and that is because of his exposure to ham radio, he had the ability to improvise a solution that saved his life.
And that is the best quality of ham radio, the ability to visualize, improvise, adapt, and overcome, which is why I like the high-speed multimedia model so much, but it's only one. There's so many things that are just great things to tinker with that stimulate the imagination of a young person or an old person.
You're in the midst of our second and final excerpt of an Eric Guth 4Z1UG conversation with new ARRL CEO Tom Gallagher, NY2RF. We'll conclude Eric's interview in a moment. This is the RAIN Report.
You're listening to The RAIN Report from www.therainreport.com.
One of the other areas of ham radio here at the League we're focusing on is a whole group of people that are retiring early in their mid-50s, and they're looking for something. They're looking for fun. At the Science Museum in Palm Beach, where I used to volunteer, they would walk in and say, you know, ham radio, I've always wanted to do that. How do I do that? You get them into a class and they get a license, and then they're surrounded with people that are knowledgeable and they're good at imparting that knowledge to others. And they have an enormous amount of fun building something as simple as the mighty Michigan Mighty Mite, which Bill Mira is so fond of touting. It's a handful of components in a transistor. When you fire it up with a 9-volt battery and hear the carrier on a receiver, there's a ta-da moment in that.
There is this, okay, now I have a license that many of these folks get, but what do I do now? Does the NWRL have resources to capture the interest of new licensees to Elmer them beyond their initial license?
I think our members do. And I think that as an organization, we need to raise the consciousness level of our members, particularly through our clubs. The clubs are the sort of opening portal for a new ham. When you have a new ham join your club, don't stand in the background. Walk up, introduce yourself, and ask them what they're interested in. Amateur radio is such a mesh of different interests. If that ham is not interested in what you're a specialist in, introduce him or her to somebody who is. If they're interested in emergency communications, but you're a DXer, just go find the emergency comms person and make the introduction. The clubs are, if you will, the nexus of activity, and supporting our clubs is one of the pillar functions of ARRL.
Radio spectrum has become big business for the FCC through spectrum auctions over the years. Do you see a threat from telecom service providers who would need more spectrum, including amateur radio spectrum? And how could the ARRL respond to this threat?
Let's change the verb from could to do. How does the ARRL respond? Let me step back, and from the perspective of a financial person, I can tell you just how valuable spectrum is. It's a source of wealth, just the way land was in the United States back in the 1800s. So if we are its custodians for the purposes that amateur radio was created, and we are the grantees of that spectrum, it's our responsibility to use it in a productive and public-serving way. That's a long answer to say what we've got is valuable, and we need to protect it. I think probably the principal interest of many of our fundraisers is the assembling and growth of an advocacy fund for the defense of spectrum. That's a high order of interest here. It's a high order of interest for me. And I'd like to take it one step further. Amateur radio operators should be supporting the Spectrum Defense Fund by sending us whatever they can. Every dollar is received with gratitude. But the other thing that amateur radio operators ought to be doing to protect spectrum is using it. Because when it's being used, it's very hard to argue that it's fallow land. And I'm struggling, hardly the best qualified to decide, but certainly qualified to ask hands all over, how do we utilize the spectrum that we've been given? First of all, just to use it, and then secondly, to help expand the frontiers of understanding by using it. High-speed multimedia, good example. Here is some extremely high-frequency spectrum that probably doesn't get as much attention as it deserves. And by moving traffic on a mesh network, one is utilizing the spectrum and making a statement. It's valuable, and we're doing something with it.
We shouldn't forget the 3.5 gigahertz band. That's prime real estate right there for any of the cellular or other providers.
Yes, absolutely. And we also have to think with a planning horizon of 10 or 15 years, what's the next piece of real estate beyond 3.5? Remember, they gave us the short waves back at the turn of the last century because nobody wanted them. Nobody could do anything with them. Ships talked to shore in the very low frequencies, and the hams could have all the stuff that was north of that because they were welcome to not very valuable real estate. Well, guess what? Civilization evolves, technology, and those frequencies become valuable in the 50s and the 60s. Now we're looking at real estate in the turn of this century at 3.5 gig that's valuable. I'm asking, what's the next place we should go? Because we got to get there first.
It's alarming to me that the manufacturers of ham radio gear are creating digital modulation products like ASUS C4FM and ICOM's D-Star. Motorola has theirs, of course. That seems to be dividing already unused and expensive repeater infrastructure into manufacturer-based subgroups.
I will tell you from a personal standpoint, from an enterprise standpoint, proprietary has never been a successful approach in computers. We've seen the proliferation of the PC because one or two or three technology firms were prepared to say, this is open source and we want everybody to contribute to its growth. So I have a natural reluctance to proprietary. I've seen it fail in the defense industry. Open source COTS in the defense industry is far more efficient and lower cost to taxpayers than proprietary stuff. That's a philosophical point of view.
I see it in the public safety area, for example. I grew up in Southern California, so I have friends who are in the public safety business, you know, radio business in Southern California. What's alarming is that all these proprietary solutions, none of these solutions talk to each other. So if you have a big regional emergency, then you've got infrastructure that is not compatible. I see this in amateur radio, and it's alarming to me.
9/11 was the same problem, Eric, wasn't it? The various services in New York City could not speak with each other, fire, EMS, and NYPD. I agree with you. That which divides us up is not a good thing, you know, just from a cultural and philosophical standpoint. That which divides us up should be viewed skeptically. Although in New York, the NYPD is still basically on analog narrowband FM repeaters. It seems to work really well for them. Anybody can listen, but it's an extremely robust system. So I'm not sure what proprietary and trunked communications does.
Volunteerism around organizations tends to be on the decline, I think, in the USA. It certainly is here. Millennials are not joiners. Is this a problem for the ARRL? And if it is, what can be done to reverse this trend?
Of course it's a problem. It's a cycle in a larger cycle. I have three millennial sons, and they have hundreds of millennial friends. They are not joiners. They like to play golf, but the thought of joining a golf club is just too much for them to bear. But the thing about millennials is that while they're not joiners, they are, more so than my generation, persons of generous spirit. They care about their communities. They care about what goes on in their communities. They care about the nation and the planet and the world. And they're prepared to devote a great deal of their time and resources to that. So here's the challenge. We need to connect the organization like ARRL or the SPCA or Wounded Warriors, whatever it is. We need to connect that organization with the good-natured, generous spirit impulse of a millennial and recognize that how you feel is admirable, but if you can't be effective, all of that energy and goodwill is wasted.
I have two millennials myself, but I get it. I see that they're wired differently from the way we were. Again, I think maybe even creating some structures or opportunities for them to get involved could go a long way.
Well, one of the things that we're doing right now is trying to rethink the way we communicate with all amateur radio operators, members or not, in new ways that are perhaps more approachable as the generations transition. 15 years ago, could you ever imagine the ARRL having a website? Could you ever imagine it having a series of Twitter feeds, Facebook page, a burgeoning library of podcasts? These are ways that we can extend the reach of QST, one of the most successful publications around, period, any field. We can extend them into areas where young people and others, millennials and their older peers, they never have gone to look before. A podcast can be an introduction that a magazine that they've never seen doesn't do.
And that concludes our second and final excerpt from an interview conducted in April 2016 with ARRL CEO Tom Gallagher, NY2RF, by Eric Guth, 4Z1UG. Eric's QSO Today podcast features hour-long conversations with the movers and shakers in amateur radio from then and now. You can hear this complete conversation as episode 88 at QSO-today.com. Audio courtesy QSO Today. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2016 Rain. All rights reserved. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. Available on demand on therainreport.com, at The Rain Report on Twitter, and via iTunes.